Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Matter of the Heart, where we bring you heartfelt, educational, quality, positive stories, all to elevate your spirit. I am your host, Carol Olivia, and I always really thank you so much for taking the time out to listen to the Matter of the Heart. Listeners, did you ever hear of the concept, the cotton ball theory? What does it mean to you, if anything? And did you ever act out or imagine that you had more money for something or anything that you would like, you know, more than you have at the present time? And what does the concept, the gratitude bank of the universe, mean to you? And if you can kind of visualize, even write it down, account, semicolon, unlimited balance, signed, the universe. Well, the topic of the show, The Matter of the Heart, is the cotton ball theory, writing out a check and other ways to manifest your dreams. And our guest is Joel Solomon. And he is a prosperity coach, award-winning speaker on the manifestation of money and the power of intuition with money. And Joel has helped people really a lot to overcome their money obstacles. And a lot of us somehow at times we have blocks, subconscious blocks. He is an award-winning speaker and chartered financial analyst. Joel has appeared on TV with CEO Money. He's been quoted in the Wall Street Journal, Newsday, U.S. News and World Report. He's been interviewed in Forbes magazine, as well as Bloomberg Radio. And Joel is the author, in which I have right in front of me, of the money rule, the 9 money rules millionaires use, only the unconventional ones. Thank you so much for that title, Joel. Welcome to the show.
Carol, so much for having me back. It's such a pleasure to be here again. I am really grateful for you. You have no idea.
Oh, thank you, Joel. Thank you. I'm curious now, because some of the listeners might have heard of the cotton ball theory, Joel, and some haven't. What does it mean for you?
So for me, it's manifesting small little things to start to develop the manifesting muscle. Just like you go to the gym, at least I used to develop my bicep and do curls, you can develop your manifesting muscle by starting small. And the cotton ball theory is to start small. And I read The Secret in 2007. And in early 2008, I was reading this passage from The Secret, and it said that this guy thought about this feather, and not any old feather, a feather with all these etchings and carvings in it, different colors. And every morning he woke up, he thought about the feather. Every night he went to sleep, he thought about the feather. And a few weeks later, one day he's walking down the street, looked down on the sidewalk, and he saw the exact feather he had thought about in his mind. And then in The Secret, it says, you try. And for me, the first thing that popped into my head was cotton balls. And I don't know why, to this day, why it was cotton balls, but I went with it. And so every morning I woke up and I thought about cotton balls. And every night before I went to sleep, I thought about cotton balls day after day. And in April of 2008, it got warm enough here in New York when my daughters, Lauren and Morgan, were 2 and 4. And my company, by the way, is named after them, Saw-Lore Moore Prosperity Coaching. And I put them in a double jogging stroller, and we'd go running. Actually, I would run. They'd be sitting there in the stroller. We'd run around this track. We'd run to this park. We'd run up the hill. We'd get to the playground, and we'd get out of the play. I get them out of the double jogging stroller, and I put them on the swings, put them down the slide, push them down the slide, And then they'd get back into this double jogger stroll and we'd jog home. Well, it was, I guess it was May 31st, 2008, when we were doing a jog, ran around the track a few times, got to the park, ran up the hill to the park, got to the playground, and I was getting them out of the double jogging stroller when I looked down and I saw all over this playground, not one, not two, but tons of cotton balls. Mm-hmm. And I remember screaming at Lauren and Morgan, Lauren, Morgan, pick up the cotton balls. And for weeks and months after that happened, I had on my desk one of those cotton balls with the sand all over it, reminding me that you can manifest whatever you want and a thought can become a thing.
That's fascinating. Really, that's fascinating. So I love the concept, Joel, and maybe some of the listeners can take out their checkbook, you know?
Right, because after I manifest the cotton balls, so right. You start small. Start with a small baby step, right? Start with something that comes to mind. It doesn't have to be big. It could be a paper clip or a cotton ball or a feather. But once you have, and rule number one of the 9 money rules is when you believe. So now you have confidence. You have belief that you can manifest more than just a cotton ball. You can, I believed that I could manifest anything. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I put that check up on the ceiling. And, you know, from the gratitude bank of the universe with Young Cat Unlimited. So choose whatever number you want. And it's from the universe. So I put that check up on my ceiling and I looked at it every morning from June 1st to 2008, every night. I said, I don't know how and I don't know why, but I do know it's coming. And I didn't put a deadline on it. I talked to my clients about this, you know, for me at least, putting a deadline means pressure, means worry, means, oh, can it actually happen? So not putting a deadline on it. And I would have been happy if that money came in 2012 or 14 or 2020. And 2008, you may remember, was not the best year in the stock market. I was managing money for Citigroup at the time. And I was up in my portfolio. The stock market was down 40%. But, you know, obviously nowhere near making anywhere near the amount of money I put on that check. But 2009 was a better year. And I remember January 10th, 2010, my boss, he called me into a conference room. He said, Joel, you had a good year last year. He slips a piece of paper to me for my bonus check. And I flipped it over and it was within $1,000 of that check I had up on my ceiling for the last 18 months.
Oh, how interesting.
So a thought had become a thing once again, and I had manifested a very large amount of money.
Right. Wow. So then with that concept, Joel, how about telling the listeners, taking out a check, what would you like to tell them about a check? Or?
Yeah, so start with something that you believe in, right? I tell my clients, I had a client recently come to me and said he wanted to do this. And I said, great. So you want to start with $1 million? What's your belief level that you could manifest $1 million? And he said, on a level from 1 to 10, where 10 is a knowing, you have absolute faith it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And where 1 is massive doubt, there's no way it's going to happen. He said, it's a 1. I'll admit to you, it's a 1. There's no way it's going to happen. I said, okay, let's start smaller. 100,000? No, that's a 1 or a 2. Mm-hmm. Okay, what about 50,000? No, that's probably a 2 or a 3. So you have to get the number up to 7, 8, 9, or 10. Mm-hmm. And we got it. We found a number that he was very confident in, that he felt like it was a little bit of a stretch, but he would feel very happy, really grateful. And that's the other trick. If you could feel grateful now for what you manifest in the future, then you're 90% the way there. So feeling the feeling, Wayne Dyer said, make your future dream a present reality by assuming the feeling of the wish fulfilled. So make your future dream a present reality by assuming the feeling of the wish fulfilled in his bestseller, Wishes Fulfilled. And that's the key, feeling the feeling. So if you could feel so much gratitude and so grateful as if it's already happened, then it's coming really quick.
Yeah, well, that's fascinating because usually people, when they hear the word money, they're not thinking of the feeling of the money. They're thinking more the cerebral, you know, the mindset of the money.
Right. It's all about the heart.
The
heart. It's a matter of the heart.
Mm-hmm. So you're looking at it, as you just said, and thank you for the plug of the show, Joe. The matter of the heart connection to the money. So what is that doing? What type of energy is that doing, Joe, when we open it up with the heart?
Money is energy at the end of the day. Right. Everything is energy, right? So, I mean, that's what I think people need to understand. Mm-hmm. I think there's this whole concept that money's difficult to get and, you know, it's different than everything else, but it's just energy. And by putting that energy out into the world, I talk about giving, rule number 6, it must come back to you, right? So you just have to know that money is energy and it's flowing. You got to keep it flowing at all mm-hmm. times.
Mm-hmm. So when you say in your book, a subtitle, underneath the 9 money rules, millionaires use only the unconventional ones. When you're using the concept, only the unconventional ones, are you talking about intuition, the heart? What insight, Joel?
All of it. So you're an intuitive, Carol. So you know that rule number 2 in the 9 money rules is trust your intuition. Mm-hmm. And it is, as you know, it's so powerful. People, I think, don't trust their intuition enough. But I say in the book that it's really an accumulation of all your experiences. And I'll be provocative and say, you know, we have many lifetimes. Mm-hmm. So it's an accumulation of experiences in many lifetimes. And that's much more powerful than anything you've learned in the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. You know, the intellect, the knowledge that you think is so powerful. No, it's actually the intuition and all the summed up experiences of many, many lifetimes. So use it, trust it, and develop it like any other muscle. So, you know, I teach people to every chance you get, you're making 1,000 decisions every single day. So I do this all the time with my daughters when we're on vacation. You know, we're in a hotel and you got 4 elevators to choose from. Don't look up, don't try to, you know, don't see where it's coming, but just guess which one's going to come first. Mm. And you can do it on all these little decisions. You know, if you're going, you're driving on the car, have you multiple ways to go? Do you go highway or do you go local roads? You know, trust your intuition. Mm-hmm. There's so many different decisions you're making throughout the day, little, small decisions. But as you develop your intuition, you'll mm-hmm. find that it'll be really good for even bigger decisions. Mm. And I talk about one particular way to develop your intuition is using the sway test. Mm-hmm. And the sway test is just grounding yourself, asking yourself a question that you know is the truth. So I ask myself, do I love Lorna Morgan? I sway forward. You know, and you ask yourself grounding questions. You ask yourself a question that you know you're going to sway backward, like I hate prosperity coaching, so I sway backward really hard usually. And then you ask yourself the question you want the answer to and see which way you sway and just have yourself, you know, hopefully you're on a stable ground. You're not, you know, things aren't swaying at all and you're just stable and see which way you go. Mm. And that's your intuition. That's your higher self giving you decision-making capabilities. Mm.
I love that. Now, supposing, I'm sure some of the listeners go to financial advisors, either independent, you know, or through a bank or whatever it is. What I find interesting with this is you're talking certainly about self-empowerment.
Absolutely.
So, right. So the advisor is telling you, I don't know, invest in blah, blah. How would you, what would you advise the listeners to do?
Well, rule number 8 mm-hmm. is DIY investing. And I believe with my fullest of hearts that you can do it yourself. Mm-hmm. It's we're being taught, and I'm going to be more provocative here. We're being taught a lie by mm-hmm. financial institutions that you can't do it yourself. Give mm-hmm. us your money and we'll manage it for you and we'll do better. Well, you know, look at the track record of active management over the last 5, 10, 20 years. Mm-hmm. Passive investing, where you just put your money into an index fund, has done better than all the active managers. And of course, you're paying, that's excluding fees,
right?
And you're paying them 1 or 2 or 3% a year, which, you know, is going into their pocket, not yours. Mm-hmm. So I have a very simple 5-step stock screen in my book, The 9 Money Rules. It's a proprietary screen that I teach my clients, but obviously anyone buys the book can get that. And by the way, I'll give 5 books away to any of your listeners here. And if they, all they have to, you know, just we'll put the link to my website and I'll give 5 books away, The 9 Money Rules, Millionaire Shoes. But so I have the 5-step stock screen. I also have a 7-step screen to invest in real estate.
Mm-hmm.
But the most important thing is, what's your belief level? Back to rule number one. Because I had a client come to me who said, look, stock market's risky. And I said, that's your belief.
Right.
And if that's your belief, we need to change your belief before I will ever put one dime of your money into the stock market. Because as you said, Carol, like, I'm empowering people and you create your life. And so it doesn't matter if you're giving your money to somebody else. You made the decision to give it to somebody else, and or you keep it yourself. If you think the stock market is risky and you say, okay, well, I don't know anything about this, I'll just give it to an advisor, what's going to happen is you choose an advisor who's probably not going to be very helpful in the stock market, and things are not going to go well for you anyway. So until you get your belief level up, I would say don't invest in the market at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because what's going to happen is you're going to be buying when you should be selling and selling when you should be buying. So that's really critical. And I teach my clients, what's your belief level on every single investment you already own or the ones you're thinking about? And if you're not a 7, 8, 9, or 10, then don't go there.
Well, that's fascinating. Would you also contribute that to real estate?
Yeah, absolutely. Real estate. In fact, I start my chapter by saying, if you, and I say, skip this chapter,
mm-hmm.
if you don't believe that, so that I think the name of the chapter is, real estate can make you rich.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's a statement, but most of my chapters are questions, but real estate can make you rich.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I then start the chapter by saying, do you believe that? Mm-hmm. If you don't believe that, well, skip the chapter.
Mm-hmm.
Because real estate is, if you have no belief that real estate is going to get you rich, then there's no point in reading a chapter about how to make very simple 7 steps to deciding what property to invest in. And the formulas I give and all that is going to go in one ear and out the other if you don't believe you can be rich by investing in real estate. So mm-hmm. it's all back to beliefs.
Mm. I was just going to say that. And I love the chapter 7. What can you be grateful for?
Yeah, that's a big one. You know, we talked about at the top of the show, right? So gratitude is really everything. And, you know, I talk about how, you know, I am so grateful for my daughter Morgan, because when she was less than 9 months old, we literally had to rush her to the hospital. Her temperature was over 104, and we had gone to the pediatrician, and mm-hmm. the pediatrician said, get to the hospital. And the surgeon had already decided before she even got there that she needed surgery. Imagine a mm-hmm. baby you can hold in your hand, one hand, and having to release that baby to a surgeon to operate on her. Me and my wife at the time were literally in tears, and just mm-hmm. like the tears couldn't stop until, you know, he came out and said that, you know, the operation was a success. But, you know, even when she came out, she had all the wires and the IV tube in her, and it was just really, really upsetting. But, you know, few hours later, the color had returned to her face, and of course she was smiling and happy again. And for me, I am so grateful that, you know, she's alive, right? So I'm so grateful. And I write down, I have a gratitude journal. I recommend that everyone put together the gratitude journal and write down five things they're grateful for every morning, five things they're grateful for every night. And, you know, I write down every morning and every night, I'm grateful for Lorna Morgan.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And yeah, so in fact, I talk about this in my book. There was a professor, Professor Seligman, who actually did a study. Martin Seligman, he's also a New York Times bestselling author, psychologist, who did a study on the impact of gratitude. He actually put electrodes on the brain and had these people do a gratitude journal every night. I think it was for 21 days. And write down, he had them write down three things they're grateful for and why. And then he checked the impact of in their brain over that at the end of the period, and the brain synapses had actually expanded. So there's actually scientific evidence that when you're doing a gratitude journal or writing down things you're grateful for and why, that it actually positively impacts your brain. That there's brain elasticity in those areas of happiness and gratitude.
That's right. So what I'm picking up, Joel, is that there's obviously there's a link with gratitude and with positive thoughts. And because of that, I would think it might could even affect the immune system.
Yeah, absolutely. The more you focus on what you're grateful for already, the more things that will come into your life that you'll be able to find gratitude for.
And you'll notice them.
Absolutely. It's every day, not everything goes right in my life, right? So every day there are things, and I used to, for many, many years, probably until about maybe 12 years ago, I would, right before I go to sleep, I would think about all the things I could have done better that day, you know, the things that I didn't do quite right. Instead of focusing on things I'm grateful for. And so you go to sleep in that not so great mood of I'm not great, I'm not perfect, I could improve on this, on this, on this, as opposed to all the good things in your life. And look, I'm pretty sure everyone who's listening to this podcast has a ton of things to be grateful for. And, you know, not to talk about relative to other people in this world, but there's billions of people on this world who can't listen to a podcast, right? Who don't have the computer or the phone technology to do that. So, you know, be grateful for what you have. There's so much in our lives, little things that we don't stop and just relish.
No, that's, I think that's important because when we're grateful, we see more simplicity of life as well, you know?
And absolutely.
Things don't get cluttered in our mind. We're looking at really more, I would think, Joel, at the moment of things, and how to proceed with each step, you know, and being grateful what the steps have, you know, the steps are given to us for a purpose.
Absolutely. Being present. You're much more present, I think, when you have gratitude.
Right.
And like you said, you will, your immune system does improve, right? So the positivity is creating a healthiness in the body. Because you do, it really is truly mind over matter, and your mind is really creating your body as well. As you probably know, Louise Hay wrote the book You Can Heal Your Life, just one of the top 50 books, best-selling books of all time, right? So it's a really powerful book about how the mind does create the body.
So if you're going to say, Joel, to the listeners, they can look at money and finances with a very positive perspective. What would you say?
Well, there's little things you can do if you're not feeling abundant and prosperous. Little things, I talk about giving, right? And so if you're not feeling massive abundance and prosperity, give. And I know it may sound counterintuitive, mm-hmm. but it, and it doesn't have to be money, right? You could give a smile to a stranger, a compliment. Mm-hmm. You could, you may have a special gift you want to share with the world or a special talent, but giving does create a feeling in your own body that you have plenty to spare and share. And it doesn't have to be big amounts of money. If you give a few dollars, mm-hmm. you know, to somebody homeless on the street of Manhattan, there's people in need around the globe that really would feel grateful for you, for your existence by giving. Mm. And so that really changes your mindset from, you know, lack to abundance. And that it really is true. I have plenty to spare and share, and I'm here for a purpose. Mm-hmm. And you can serve, you can be of service. You know, in Mindful Money Management, chapter one was being of service to others. Now that's, I think most of us really truly believe that that's why we're here. We're mm-hmm. here to help other people in some way. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, because I love helping people. I love being of service to others.
You know, I can't help but think when you're giving to somebody that is in need, like you were just pointing out, certainly Manhattan or any city that has homeless, whatever the story is, you know, then you're also subconsciously or conscious, whatever it is, attributing the goodness of money. Because
right.
money is not necessarily good for the holder, right? I'm sure you've heard of that, you know?
Oh, yes. Yes, very much so. It's a you know, when I have people fill out my financial freedom survey, mm-hmm. One of the things I ask is, do you believe that rich people are criminals? Mm. Do you believe that you can be spiritual and rich? Mm-hmm. And I've literally had people come to me who have are of service, they're doing jobs of service, and they don't believe that they should be rich. And I'm pretty sure, if you want to call it God of the universe or whatever you believe, like, we were born to be abundant and thrive mm-hmm. on this earth. We were not born to just survive and to struggle. That's not why we were put here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's my belief.
Mm-hmm. And the goodness of the money, such as creating your own charity, you know, whatever it is, right? You know, to attribute it to what it can do for mankind as well.
Absolutely, right? So when you're giving, you could say there's karma, you know, whatever you're putting out, you get back. And there's so many opportunities to give. And yes, you know, creating your own charity is just, mm-hmm. it's so that is my dream, actually. I have a dream to set up a charity to fund a town in Africa for a generation. So that's part of what I'd like to do in the future. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so giving can really indeed change the world. And by putting it out there, in fact, I found in my life, just by giving a little bit, it just flows back to you in multiples. Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious with this insight, what do you think, or how would you, what are your thoughts once people have a lot of money, whatever that is, wealthy, and they're not giving to mankind? What do they need to grow?
I think, yeah, I mean, that's, that thesis, I think, is generally flawed, because, I mean, at least the quote unquote rich people that I've met are among the most giving mm-hmm. the people. They're, you know, John Templeton, some may say the best investor of all time. He started the Templeton Mutual Funds right. in the 1950s mm-hmm. with just a few thousand dollars. And he sold it to the Franklin Funds for almost $1 billion. Mm-hmm. He said he hadn't met anybody who hadn't given at least 10% of his earnings to charities each year over a 10-year period, who didn't have massively more wealth at the end of the 10 years than at the beginning. And I think a lot of really good business people, investors, and rich people mm-hmm. know this. You know, Warren Buffett started the 99% Club, giving away 99% of the wealth over a lifetime.
Right.
I think it was Andrew Carnegie,
right,
about 100 years ago, mm-hmm. who decided at a certain age he's just going to give all his money away for the rest of his life. So I think he built up a nest egg of something like $500 million back then, which was mm-hmm. probably about
wow
probably about 50 billion today.
Okay.
And he gave all that money away over the second half of his life. So I think from like, I don't know how long he lived, but say he lived to 80, from 40 to 80, he just gave money away every year. So there's a lot of rich people that I know who are really giving souls and give money and give their time to different organizations. So it's actually very rare, I think, that I found, you know, a very rich person or a rich person who's not giving back.
Oh, that's great. That's great for everybody to know, right, Joel? Because sometimes you hear the opposite, you know?
I mean, that's the perception,
right?
It really is a perception. And so, you know, so why don't, if you're that person who believes that, why don't you dispel that perception by becoming rich and being one of those people who give a large percentage of your money away?
Right, right, right.
That's the best way to dispel it.
Right, right. No, that's
you can't help others if you're not helping yourself. And I truly believe by having an abundant amount of money, you can help yourself and help a lot of other people as well.
So if you're going to say, Joel, and you've said so much, but how would you link just a concept or any insight? And I think you've already done it, but just another quick little scenario, spirituality and money.
Yeah, because it really is for me a truism that you can be spiritual and rich. And I've met so many people in my life who are really good souls, and are practicing the nine money rules. You know, they live their life with belief and faith. They use intuition. They're so grateful for their life. They're giving. They do it themselves. And another big one is being happy. They live a very, very happy life. And when you're putting that happiness out into the world, again, it's going to come back to you with the law of attraction. So, so be happy, smile. Why not smile to a stranger? If a listener, if I got one listener tomorrow to smile at a stranger, that would be a big win.
Oh,
you can change somebody's life just with a smile.
Which is true. That's great. Well, I think you're increasing their vibration, you know.
Absolutely. Right? If you're putting positive energy out into the world, my view is the way to change other people is change yourself. So vibrate on a higher level. And what can you do? Think about every day what things you can do to increase your vibration, increase your energy, you know, increase your positive feelings towards, you know, the highest emotional level, which is, you know, joy and happiness and ecstasy and abundance. Right. So if you think about the ways you can get to those kinds of levels, and when you are and you're vibrating that level, people will naturally want to rise up to where you're vibrating.
Well, that's great. Thank you so very, very much, Joel Song.
Oh, you're welcome. So, again, such a pleasure to be talking to you again, Carol.
Oh, thank you, Joel. Well, you've been listening to Joel Solomon. Oh, what a financial background. And he's also, with that, an author of the Nine Money Rules Millionaires Use, Only the Unconventional Ones. Fascinating. You've been listening to The Matter of the Heart. And I've been your host, Carol Olivia. And always thank you.